I get it. You didn't click the link to listen to ads, so I'll be quick. I love coaching clinics. Whether I'm speaking at one or simply just attending, I love listening to coaches talk about how they do things while having the opportunity to connect with new coaches. At the same time, I have been able to connect with coaches all over the world through apps like Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And so many times I've had conversations with coaches and thought, I wish I could share this with other coaches. But then I had another thought. In the year 2020, why should a coach have to wait a couple months for the next great coaching clinic? If they're eager to learn, why can't we just put content at their fingertips? So we created the Film Room. The Film Room is our online education system for coaches that is designed to have everything in one place, from individual skill development and team drills to set plays and offensive and defensive systems. Our platform is a one-stop shop for coaches of all levels. And best of all, it's free with literally no strings attached. For more information, visit basketballcatalyst.com/filmroom. Welcome back. On today's episode, I'm going to welcome on Rakim Annam, the founder of N1 Motion, an athletic performance company based in the Twin Cities, Minnesota area. Coach Rock works with many of the same college and professional athletes that I do, including Nate Walters, Rachel Banham, and many more. We talk about the importance of training, injury prevention, and how to keep your players from wearing down too much as the year goes on. I know a lot of coaches that become somewhat of the de facto strength coach throughout the year, so I wanted to make sure that I brought on someone to help those coaches walk through that aspect of coaching basketball. Rock does an incredible job, and I'm really excited to share our conversation with you. So let's get to it. Here's Coach Rock. All right, I'd like to welcome on Coach Rock. Rock, before we get started, you know, I've unintentionally picked kind of the same topic to start every episode. You know, your brother, Sakar, plays at Marquette. He's been in the gym a little bit, working out or coming to invite runs, but didn't they get smacked by my Badgers this year?
Yeah, man, the Badgers put them on them this year. The previous two, the Eagles got the upper hand, but this year, Badgers came ready to play thanks to, you know, a couple of your guys that you guys were working on. They had an amazing game.
Yeah. You know,
Marquette just didn't bring the heat.
Don't talk about that. We live in a what have you done for me lately culture. And so, like, whatever they did in the past, like, we're not going to go there.
No, when I talk to Badger fans, you always got to bring up the past. It's like, yeah, you won this year, but then you got to make up the excuses for them, right? But ultimately, they brought their A game.
Well, it's been funny because the Badgers come and pull out like their 20-year-old retros from the 2000 Final Four, and then they go win a game, and then they're like, hey, these are kind of rock, and next thing you know, it's like they're wearing their retros every game. I do get a kick out of it, but it's been fun watching your brother have some success at Marquette. And, you know, as we talk about kind of what you do kind of in the athletic performance world, you know, your area of expertise, very detail oriented. I know that you work with a lot of the pro guys that I work with. So kind of in English, what are some of your, you know, what are some of your areas of expertise?
I would say my areas of expertise is just being a movement specialist. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a broad term, but at the foundation of what we do in this world called strength conditioning or being a performance coach, there's so many different names nowadays, I feel like. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, our number one goal is to get athletes to move better. So that's what I feel like I really specialize in. So, you know, looking at a basketball player and looking at what their deficiencies are, what are their limitations based on the demands of what they're looking to accomplish. We first assess that, what's their movement quality like, and then we address the dysfunctions or the limitations that they have, whether that might be mobility, strength, explosiveness, whatever the case might be. And then we attack those specific areas, and then we measure along the way those improvements so that we can quantify, okay, are you a better basketball player after we do X, Y, and Z ultimately?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having spent some time around you in the gym, I know that you would do like some baseline testing with the guys. I don't know if that's the correct word, but at the beginning of the summer, and you get a guy by the end that can say, hey, you know, this is what we did. Yep. You now are this much more explosive, or this is what your vertical jump increased, or all of those things. When it comes to putting together a plan, and I know we could probably talk about this for an hour, but there's so many different methods out there. Mm-hmm. You have, and especially in the year 2020, where there's so much content being put out, how do you as a trainer kind of decipher what works, what doesn't? Is some of that specific to the player or kind of your expertise, or talk a little bit about that?
That's a great question, by the way. I think the way you determine what works and what doesn't, number one is you don't know unless you measure, right? And so I'm a big advocate for doing some type of baseline testing or assessment to evaluate, okay, where are you at right now? And then creating a roadmap as far as where do you want to be in 3 to 6 months or whatever time, you know, whatever that training period is. So once you get that baseline measurement, then you create a program specific to their training age. So, you know, I'm going to train a pro athlete who's in their eighth season a lot differently than I'm going to train, you know, a freshman in high school. And so you can't train those two people the same way because they're not going to get a positive result, right? If you throw a younger athlete, pretty much no matter what you tell them to do, they're going to get better because they have no training experience. I could say, hey, you know, like everybody, dads will tell them, hey, go, I want you to do 100 pushups every morning and you'll get stronger, right? And their vertical jump will probably go up because of it, right? Yep. But if I'm working with, you know, a seasoned vet, your approach as far as what you're trying to accomplish is totally different. And so for them, it's just, you know, I always say with the pro guys, it's, you know, how do we keep you as healthy for as long as possible so you can make as much money and do what you love for as long as possible? So then the focus is more durability. And then for that, you know, how do you know if it works is, hey, when they went through their last season, did they get injured or not, right? Or if they did get injured, was it something we could have prevented? Like if I'm going to rip to the basket and all of a sudden I just, you know, my foot just folds over and I tear my ACL, well, that's a non-contact injury. Like those are things that can be prevented. But if somebody, you know, obviously runs into somebody's leg, it's like, that's like, I mean, there's not much you can do about that. So like, really it's, you know, what is the goal? And then evaluating either through the season or with post-testing and saying, okay, did you get better at, you know, what we're trying to accomplish here?
I love how you use the word measure. And as simple or as basic as that sounds, I think it is very difficult from my standpoint as a skills trainer to measure things. You're like, okay, cause and effect. You have, like you said, you have a guy say, hey, you know, go do 10,000 push-ups over the course of the summer. Yeah, they're going to get stronger. But what was it exactly that made them, you know, stronger and being able to, I don't know, measure that? I use the example of, you know, you can cut down a tree a lot of different ways. Right. You can chop it down with an axe, no problem, but it goes a lot faster with a chainsaw, right? A chainsaw is going to be more efficient. So one of the things that I try to do from a skills training, even if it's plugging a guy in with someone like you, is we want to try to be as efficient as possible, right?
Absolutely. Exactly what you used. I love the analogy you use, you know, using an axe versus a chainsaw. So my thing is like, you know, how do you maximize the potential of an athlete? Mm-hmm. Or how do you maximize the efficiency of the time that you have? So there's a lot of different things I can do, but what can I do to get the most out of it to achieve the goal as soon as possible, right? And for some people, that's different pieces of equipment, that's different, you know, training programs or modalities. I use an example for a vertical jump or lower body strength and power development, for example. If I'm working with an athlete who has like long torso, shorter legs, and short arms, they generally, that body type is going to do great with squats.
Yep.
So I might have that athlete, they say, hey, I want to increase my vertical by 5 inches and 6 months. Okay, great. We're going to do squats 3 days a week. And that's going to be the primary tool that I use to develop that specific quality that will translate to increasing vertical jump, right? Now, if I'm working with a 7 foot guy with a short torso and super long legs that are disproportionate and super long arms,
yeah,
that's not typically the right, body type that's going to do well performing squats. When they do that, their chest is going to drop towards their knees. That's going to put excess strain on their low back and yada, yada, yada. Over time, I'm not going to be able to load them, progress them as quickly. And so I'm not going to get the most out of that. So what I might do is there's a thing called a safety bar that it shifts the weight or the momentum of the weight just a little bit differently. So it's more comfortable and allows them to stay in a safer position without A, getting them hurt. And it also allows me to stress them more by adding more load and building more explosiveness that way. Another good one is like a mega trap bar. It's like a big hexagon shaped bar that you pull off the ground. So instead of doing a barbell deadlift where the bar is in front of them, they have to bend over and pick it up. Again, that's pretty risky, right? All it takes is one bad rep. You pick up something the wrong way, all of a sudden your back is out for a week, right? Mm-hmm. So if we can do something that shifts the weight around them, so now their center of mass is more centered, that's just a more effective way.
I think about the guys that I would have doing workouts when we were working out of the same gym. You have a guy like Jared Bergeron who works for me now, or Carson Shanks.
At right.
6'11 to 7 foot, 7'1". And then you have a guy like Nate Walters or some of the smaller guys at 6 feet tall. You obviously are going to load differently, though that they're all professional athletes. One thing too that sticks out to me, and I've had this conversation with Jared Bergeron quite a bit, is tight hips. From what I've been told, I know basketball players, or I think that basketball players are notorious for having really tight hips. So we've talked about vertical jump. We've talked about, a little bit about explosiveness, but I want to ask questions about stretching. Like, you have flexibility and you have mobility. What's the difference between flexibility and mobility, and what would be important for players that play basketball where you need to be explosive?
So flexibility and mobility, I think a lot of times people will think these two terms are synonymous, but they're actually different. So, mobility is more so your ability to take your body through a given range of motion. Think about a door hinge, right? When I open a door, how much can I open it? Can I open it 90 degrees? Can I open it 180, right? That's how it works from a joint perspective for mobility. So if I lack mobility, let's say in my hips, when I do a squat, I'm not going to be able to get as much depth, right? If I lack mobility at the hip. So there's a combination of control there and strength involved at that joint. And then flexibility, think more soft tissue. Flexibility is going to be basically, it's more that connective tissue. So if you're holding on to a rubber band and I pull one end of it, like, how far can I stretch that rubber band, right? So that's what, by definition, what flexibility means. So these two things are different. You can't have good mobility without flexibility, right? But you can have flexibility without mobility. And so it's more important to have mobility as an athlete. And the reason why it's important is that you need to, and it's all sport specific, right? So the mobility or the range of motion that a gymnast needs to go through in order to be a good gymnast is a lot different from the range of motion that a basketball player needs to achieve, right? So basically, what is the optimal angles? What are the optimal positions that you need to do? I'll use shooting as an example. If you have somebody who has super tight shoulders and they can't get their elbow above their ear or their eye, which is a lot of cue that like shooting coaches will use, for the follow through, but they have like really poor thoracic mobility and not enough range of motion at the shoulder joint, their shot's going to be really flat. So what's that going to do? It's going to change the trajectory of the ball. It's going to lower their shooting percentage and so on and so forth. So that like actual structural limitation that they have is actually going to greatly impact their ability to perform their sport at a high level, right? But if I can increase mobility, so that active strength of being able to pull my arm up, so now I can have a higher release point right away, you have that instant impact and being a better shooter. And that applies same thing with like hip mobility and being able to get deeper into a stance and being able to slide on defense and just being more explosive vertically as well.
So one of the first things that you talked about was we want this to be performance-based, right? We're talking about purpose. So if you want to do, if the purpose of you coming to work with me is to add 5 inches to your vertical, then we need to work smart. And some of those days when working smart means working hard, but there are some days where I think we just got to make sure that our hips are working. One of the things that I would hear from the guys that worked with you is that had worked with other guys that, man, we spend so much time on our hips doing things where we're not really necessarily sweating. We want to make sure our hips are working and how much they appreciated that, because I think you can go load up the bar. Hey, I want to increase my vertical. Well, I'm going to go load up and maybe my squat's going to go up. But if my hips aren't working correctly,
right,
then I'm not going to be able to drop my hips. I'm not going to be able to be explosive from some of those stances that I need to be in the basketball game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, and you know, our industry in general, especially nowadays, everybody with so much content on Instagram and YouTube and all these other platforms, you know, it's, everybody wants to work with athletes. Everyone wants to be a performance coach or trainer, whatever definition you want to use. And so I think, and I'm very purposeful with what, you know, I call people in this industry who I think know what they're doing. So we use the term coach, right? So a coach is someone who teaches and gives instructions and creates a path forward. A trainer is what I use the analogy of, the person is like the jockey on a horse, right? Or someone who trains dogs for a dog show. Like, anybody can be a trainer and say, do this, do that, run to this cone, do this, do that, right? But a coach is someone who's going to break it down and say, here's why you want to do it this way. Here's how I want you to execute it. And here's the reason behind it. And I know you as a skills coach, you know, you're very big on, we're not going to just go through drills for the sake of going through the drill. We're going to create more game-like situations that we can apply. And here's why I want you to shift your weight from here to here, right? There's a purpose for that. And performance training is no different.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of people out there that there's a misconception that if I work hard, I know that's how I grew up. So when I went to the weight room, I wanted to work hard and I wanted to leave sore or tired. And then when I did my basketball workout, I wanted to leave tired. Like, hey, I got a great sweat. I feel like I accomplished something, when in reality, I maybe just ran around the gym the entire time with bad form. And yeah, all I did was encourage bad habits, not only on the court, but also in the weight room. That's completely counterproductive.
100%. I mean, you talk about being effective with your time. I mean, I always say if you're coming to train because you want to be tired, I'm like, this is just not the right situation for you. You can go outside and run 10 miles and be tired. Like, that's not, you know, that's not a good use of time. But if you're coming to get better and increase, you know, improve specific metrics that you want to improve on to make you a better athlete, you know, then that's, you know, then that's the right decision to make.
On the basketball floor, DJ Sackman, who I used to work with in New York and New Jersey, he made a comment probably about a year ago now. And he said, there are people that work people out and there are people that get people better. There, you know, and on the basketball side of things, both are essential. Like your brother needs somebody to go rebound and tell him to go through these drills and get a million shots up. And that's right. Somebody, yep. Someone's working him out, but he also needs somebody to say, hey, listen, we got to tweak your feet on this. And I think there's a lot of people that just, especially in basketball, but also in the athletic performance world, that just work people out. I have to laugh when I see people post stuff on social media that I know don't have a very great reputation or one that's very credible, just posting something because it looks cool. I mean, you also see the basketball guys like, hey, yeah, I'm going to hop on your back and you're going to like carry me and I'm going to dribble a basketball, you know, like, but it looks hard as heck. And we leave and we're like, hey, I did something. No, you like did something that was challenging, but you didn't do anything that was related to what you need.
100%. And always, and obviously, you know, we're not saying that you shouldn't have those moments where you want to go really hard and increase the intensity and get your heart rate up and sweat and be fatigued, because obviously you have to simulate, okay, if when you get tired, the first thing that starts to fade is your skill, your brain's ability to process and make decisions, which is why a lot of coaches will put, as soon as they see a kid getting tired, they're going to sit him on the bench before they start turning the ball over and taking bad shots, right? So you need to be able to, you do have to be able to increase the intensity, but you know, to give you a general idea of kind of what our process is. So the beginning, we're working on a lot of mobility, flexibility, working on the small details. And then we get into very high quality repetition, lower rep ranges, but very high quality and high intensity. And then at the end of the workout, when we're doing things that are less technical, then we want to go hard, right? And work on more conditioning to then build that motor up. So there's just, it's just about having a specific time and place. Same thing on the basketball court. I'm sure, as you know, if you, the things that you really want to address, if we're going to work on shooting first thing in the workout, that's a high skilled movement. You're going to do that in the beginning, right? You're not going to do that at the end of a workout, you know, while they're super dead and you're trying to correct somebody's form. At the end, you might just do more, you know, of a repetition, get used to shooting when your legs are a little fatigued, but that's, you know, you're not going to be critiquing and making so much technical changes at that point.
Yep. And I, when it comes to athletic performance stuff, what I think is important for people to understand, like basketball and all sports, but basketball is very, it's a sloppy game. There's so many variables. And when I'm teaching players to say, hey, this is the specific footwork because this is the optimal push that you're going to get out of this. And you get a kid that's like, what happens if I can't get to that? I'm like, correct. Like, you're probably not going to be able to get to this specific footwork. You have to do the best that you can to make the best out of a non-optimal situation. So I like when you are, when I've watched you observe guys going through workouts where you force them to do things at the end where get to, not only get their motor up, but also you have to find ways to be as efficient as possible within those inefficient situations.
Right. Absolutely.
So I want to talk a little bit about kind of season training. Obviously, if you get a guy like Nate Walters comes back, I know a couple times he's come back, he's been a little dinged up from playing overseas or in the NBA. And it's like, hey, I got to take a couple weeks before we can really ramp it up. If you have, so for example, if Nate's like, hey man, I have 7 weeks before I head back overseas, that's a little different than a kid that you get right after the high school season's done who says, hey, I'm not going to college until September. But you have preseason, you have in-season, you have off-season. I know we don't have a ton of time, but can you kind of break down how you would structure that, kind of some of those setups?
Yeah, so I'll start with off season. Off season, the approach to training is non-specific. Off season's when, you know, working with a basketball player, we'll use college because that's kind of the middle of the road. Working with a college basketball player, you know, that's when we're going to do things like we're going to get on the track and we're going to do track workouts. We're going to go to the volleyball court. So we're going to do some different, you know, fun volleyball drills. We're going to do some pool workouts, biking, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to throw in a lot of non-specific things at them just to switch up some of those motor patterns that they do so much during the preseason and while they're in season. And so really their body just needs a break. It's the same concept as like youth sports as, hey, you know, in this fall slash winter, I'm going to do my traveling club basketball. And then in the spring, I'm going to play baseball, right? Just that mental break and just that physical break of that repetitive motion is going to be extremely important for the longevity of their body. Because at the end of the day, it's just mileage, right? So how much mileage are you putting on their hips when they're doing a ton of shuffling and sprints and all of this, that, and the other? So off season is going to be non-specific, more focused on building a base of aerobic capacity. So that's basically just cardio, endurance, and then slowly kind of ramp up and use that time too. If you want to just do more like bodybuilding type approach to your lifts, that's totally fine too in the off season. As you transition into your preseason, that's when you want to start to get things to be more specific, and it slowly ramps up to being doing more sport specific movements. And when I say specific, I mean like getting down to the nitty gritty as far as like your joint angles. So for example, if I'm doing a squat in the off season, I might do what we call like an ass to grass squat or like a deep squat, where you're going down, like your butt's by your heels. Now that's, you're never going to go that low playing basketball, right? Even when you're sitting down and guarding the, or you're on the block posting up, you're going to be, you know, probably around like 140 to 160 degree of knee flexion, right? So you're in like this semi squat stance. You don't go much lower than that. Preseason, I might start to go around like 90 degree knee bend or start to work to more of that specific movement while I'm in season. Then I'm going to go like these partial squats, right? So taking that one exercise and how I could tweak it in each one of those seasons is basically just the specific angles, the specific energy systems that we're using. Off season, again, like I said, it's going to be more cardio, long duration, slow pace. When we get into preseason, we're going to start getting them into like, you know, more interval type bursts. So like in basketball, we've broke it down to where it's about every 25 to 30 seconds, there's stoppage, whether that be a foul, whistle blows, or something goes out of bounds, right? So like we need to do a lot of sprints that last for, okay, we're going to go hard for 25 to 30 seconds, then you're going to break for 20 seconds, right? For that stoppage time. And then we're going to try and do that for as many, you know, reps for, hey, we're going to try and replicate what a quarter feels like or a half feels like, and then do that. And then while you're in season, our approach is going to be decreased volume because they're going to be playing so much. We need them fresh for practice and games. Keep the intensity moderate to high so they still get that stimulus so they can maintain their progress. And then work a ton on just like restoration, rehabilitation, keeping their bodies feeling fresh, doing a lot of mobility, because that's where you'll feel a lot of people start getting tight just from the pounding on their knees and stuff like that. So I'm just working on more restorative and just maintenance at that point.
So you talk a lot of the stuff in season is we want to make sure that we're staying sharp, right? That our bodies are able to perform. I see a lot of kids that will work their butt off in the off season or even preseason. Then they get in season and they think, hey, I'm getting a workout with my practice. That's good enough. But in reality, we still need to make sure that we're prepping for those workouts to make sure that our body's performing at a high level.
Absolutely. And you see this a lot at all levels, really. What happens, let's just, you know, looking at the high school level, you know, kids come out in November, tryouts, they're excited. You know, everybody's super amped up for the, you know, holiday tournaments. They're playing well. And then once they get to like the end of January, they start to hit this lull where they're burnt out. They get the winter blues. They start getting sick, missing games. That's when a lot of injuries will start happening. And the reason for that is that they've trained so hard, usually in the preseason and off season, but then they stop and then their legs are dead. So then they don't have the, you know, they've changed their shot. Now they're using too much upper body and this, that, and the other. And a lot of that just because they're not physically put together as sharp as they need to be to kind of get through that mid-season slump. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. You spend all this time preparing. It's like if you want to buy, you're looking up to saving up to buy this incredible car, and you save up all this money, and then you get an opportunity to drive the car, and you don't care about it.
Right.
You gotta take care of the car. You've invested a lot of time, a lot of energy, and in a lot of cases, money into that. So right. I do want to talk about high school coaches. I speak with a lot of coaches that just become kind of the de facto strength coach because they don't have anybody on staff that has the level of expertise that really knows what they're doing. And I'm sure you have heard way more than I have, but the horror stories of a coach that just one day says, hey, you know, we haven't lifted for a while, or after a bad loss, they convince themselves, you know, hey, we got to be a little bit tougher. So we just run into the weight room, we load up the bar, and we start squatting. What would you tell, you know, what would be some areas of advice that, or things of advice that you would give high school coaches that don't have an athletic performance background but are somewhat forced into that role?
I would say number one, find a good program online to follow. Don't try and just manufacture something that you do at Anytime Fitness, because at the end of the day, you're not a high school athlete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so don't just try to manufacture something or something that you used to do, you know, 15 years ago when you're in high school or the case might be. I think there's a lot of options online. We at N1 Motion actually provide that resource for high school coaches where we send them programming through our mobile app and the high school coach should actually take their team through this workout. So something of that nature is number one. The number two, I would say that don't be so anxious to try and just load your athletes up with weight and trying to be that rah-rah guy that, you know, trying to motivate and overstimulate these kids by throwing a bunch of weight on their backs. Always try and I'm very conservative when it comes to like the first time I meet an athlete and we were looking to work with, whether that's a team or an individual, start conservative and just see how they move. Like just understand like basic principles of when they're squatting or they're doing certain movements, like is their back flat? Like does it look like they're going to hurt themselves? And if you're not sure and you don't know what that looks like, then you should not assume that role as the de facto strength coach. Mm-hmm. Right. And if it's forced onto you, then do some research. There's, again, so much content online where you can say, hey, what's proper squat technique? And just start with body weight and then add dumbbells and do a goblet squat, right? So have that base competency as a coach, and you're going to get a lot more buy-in from your athletes and the head coach in most cases when you do that. Just take a little bit of extra time. You wouldn't walk into a gym and try and coach, you know, a high school team if you didn't know anything about basketball and you just walked in, just, you know, start saying, all right, guys, we're going to do layup lines for an hour for our practice today. Like, no, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So it's like, just get that base level of competency as far as like very core movements. And I would break it down to basically like, you know, maybe 4 to 5 movements. Number one, like getting them to just squat well, again, starting with body weight. Two, can they do a good push-up, right?
Yeah.
Three, can they pull? So like, doing an inverted row, they have good pulling mechanics, or a bent over dumbbell row. When they do that, is their back rounded? Are they overarching their back? Doing an overhead pressing movement where they're just pressing something over their head. Are they arching their back again when they do this? And then a hinging pattern, which would be minimal knee bend, but basically you're reaching towards the ground with your hands while maintaining minimal knee bend, and does their back stay flat? So like those are like, literally, that's part of the screens that we do with no weight to see, okay, how do you move naturally? And then if I see like, oh, you don't do that well with any weight, then I'm not going to have you do it with weight and load that dysfunctional pattern, because that's how injuries happen. So going back to it, if you're placed into a position, or if you assume a position where, you know, athletic training might not be your background, but you're going to be taking on this role, just take the time and do your research as far as like, what are some basic things that I can do that are going to go a long way with helping these athletes? Because again, you don't want to do any harm. If you don't want to just try and overcompensate, and because you feel like you don't know a ton, that you're going to try and do these elaborate drills that you see on Instagram, a lot of times that stuff not done properly is going to lead to injury. And that's the absolute worst case scenario. Your job is to not get them injured. Like, number one, that's before increasing performance and getting faster, bigger, faster, stronger. It's maintaining their health and not getting them injured is your first job.
Two things that come to mind as you say this. Number one, I think the best coaches ask the most questions.
Right.
If you don't know what you're talking about or what's going on, ask. Ask somebody who does. There are so many coaches that I work with that, why I get connected with them and why I want them to help, or why I want to help them, is because they come and ask questions. Now, if I don't know them, I look them up. It's like, wait a minute, you've won 6 conference titles in a row.
Right.
You know, like, hold up. I heard a story the other day of one of the best Division III programs in the country. Their head coach talked to another Division III guy who's young and new and said, hey man, how do you beat this team? I saw you beat them a couple years ago in the playoffs. And you're like, wait a minute, you got one guy who's won a couple national titles. You got this other guy who's the young buck. And the young buck was the teacher for the day. And little, you know, the young buck gives him the information. And guess what happens? The national title goes up and beats the team they were talking about on the road. The best coaches ask the most questions. Second of all, you talked about social media and all the content that's out there. We just had this conversation with a guy named Joe Gill who does analytics stuff. And he said, I think skills trainers have the most difficult job, but I would also say that performance guys have the same struggle. If you're going to put content out, and let's say that you are the social media coordinator for Alabama's football team, what are you going to put on social media? You're going to put up like the guy maxing out bench pressing 500 pounds and the whole team's around him screaming. You're not going right. to like, hey, here's Tua Tagovailoa laying on the ground, loosening his hips today. Like, right. you know what I mean? And right. so it's marketing for me. I talk about the people that are like, Reed, you know, your stuff is way too advanced. I'm like, no, it's not. The stuff you see on social media, that breakdown of LeBron James. Yeah. You have sixth grade boys. It's different. But there's so much content out there that you see, oh, hey, this is what this program's doing, and they're really successful, so I want to do it. It's like, no, right. you didn't see the lead up to that.
Right, exactly.
I get – this is the funniest question that I get all the time. I get messages from kids on social media saying, like, can you help me to dunk a basketball? And my response is, have you ever seen a picture of me? Do I look like I can dunk? I look like an outside linebacker.
Right.
what would you give, just because I know that that is like the, and it's a loaded question, but if there was one thing that you could do to increase your vertical jump, what would you tell kids?
Get stronger.
Yeah.
It's honestly, it's that simple. It's a lot of this stuff is not rocket science. You know what I mean? It's very basic stuff. It's like, if you can't even say, hey, how do I lose weight? So like, you either got to move, burn more calories or eat less. Like we make it complicated, but it's really not. So vertical jump is all about strength to body mass ratio, right? Usually the guys and girls who are the best jumpers, they're very lean. So they don't have a lot of excess weight and body fat. And they have a lot of elasticity, and they're able to absorb and harness a lot of energy in their tendons, right? And they're strong for their body mass, right? So when I say strength to body mass ratio, that's different from just brute strength, right? So doing super heavy squats or deadlifts or lifting like you're a power lifter or going to be in the strongest man competition, those guys, their brute strength is amazing. They can move, you know, let's say they're squatting 1,000 pounds, right? But they weigh 500 pounds, right? That ratio is a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Or, you know, what you want to be an amazing leaper is, let's say you weigh 150 pounds, but you're able to squat, let's say 350 or 400.
Yep.
Right. The ratio is going to be a little bit different. So it's ultimately just increasing that strength to body mass ratio. So it's trying to eat healthy, stay lean, and get as strong as possible. And you can do that a million different ways, whether that's just doing like a lot of lower body strength exercises, lunges, squats, deadlifts. There's a lot of different ways to develop that. Box jumps and plyometrics is a big term that people associate with vertical jump. And yes, that's a key factor, but the reason why that, you know, those box jumps and the elastic, you know, depth drop to box jumps and all these other fancy plyometric drills are basically what that takes is, once I develop the strength, I have to create like that quick bounce. So if you look at a guy, you know, who takes a long time to like wind up, take two steps to gather, and then they swing their momentum up, and they have a lot of leap, but it just takes a lot long time for them to kind of harness that energy. That's someone who would benefit from doing more quick twitch, fast, explosive plyometric exercises. Versus if you're just like, have no vertical jump and you haven't really done much jump training before, I would just say, start out by just getting stronger, just build your leg strength, build your core strength. And then as you progress, then starting adding in some of those, advanced plyometric drills. The reason why I say you don't want to just jump out of the gate, just start jumping around and doing all these hops, is that a lot of times people will overdo it. And then they start getting like patellar tendinopathy, tendonitis, jumper's knee, a lot of different terms for it. And then next thing you know, it's like, I can't even, you know, one day I'm exposed, the next day my knees just hurt so bad. And you see that a lot. That's actually what happened to me when I was younger. I was obsessed with Vince Carter. He's like one of my favorite players growing up. And I'm like, I want to be like Vince, you know what I mean? Playing above the rim, flying all over the place. So I'm buying the jump soles. You know, I know you remember those.
Oh, yeah.
I'm buying the jump soles, every jump kit you can think of. And then I'm just like overdoing it with probably just terrible technique, but I'm doing all this stuff increase. And I started, I mean, I'm only 5'11", and I started dunking, what, in the fall of my freshman year. And so it worked, but guess what? Like by my sophomore year, my knees were shot. And so, you know, a lot of my game was predicated around like explosiveness and athleticism. So it's just like you're limiting yourself versus if I had developed the strength first and then gradually progressed into that stuff, you wouldn't be dealing with those long-term issues. So,
yeah, a couple of things. Number one, when you started talking about like being an optimal, like what an optimal athlete looks like in those ratios, you literally you describe the opposite of me. and a hint, you know, I don't know if they sell those jump soles anymore, but you screwed up because I wanted to do the same thing. You just tried to jump higher. I just lowered the rim to 8 feet.
I did that too.
Yeah, I was just so much. I think back. I grew up on a farm, and my dad, like, we have this machine shed, right? That's where the tractors go. I didn't even let my dad park the tractors inside. And so here I am dunking on an 8 foot hoop, like as a seventh grader, like on concrete. I think back, my knees hurt just thinking about all the stupid stuff I did when
just
I was
by hours of the gym jumping on the concrete.
Hours, just straight concrete. Now I go like stand up. Ow. Well, as we kind of wrap this up, we do have some segments that I like to ask. The podcast being called The Drawing Board, and the phrase, you know, going back to the drawing board, when you have to, when something's not going right and you have to adjust, what's kind of your process personally, even professional or off the outside of the weight room? How do you adjust when you have to go back to the drawing board?
I mean, that's to me, I mean, that's a great analogy for life. There's a lot of times we have these expectations in life and how we want things to happen and when they're going to happen, and you try and plan it out. And then guess what? It never seems to work out like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, one thing that I try and do is have the mindset and have a, first of all, having a mindset of just trying to get 1% better each and every day. Mm-hmm. These could be small incremental improvements, and just, it could be, you know, how I attack my day, my energy, my knowledge as a coach, how I am a leader, as a business owner, being a better husband, being a better son, brother, whatever the case might be, just having that mindset of, hey, I have the desire and I'm going to be committed to getting 1% better, not dwelling on the past or your past failures, but just looking at, okay, how can you improve from those mistakes or those failures and then continue to just keep your eyes forward. Then I would say just having a daily routine that allows you to be consistent and give yourself that time to kind of reevaluate, reassess, and then attack that with a full head of steam.
As you talk about that, I think about the word challenges. When you're constantly challenging yourself, you're going to fail pretty consistently. Absolutely. And I think it's through that failure that you get used to failing. You get used to, hey, that didn't work, instead of moping or doubt, beginning to doubt yourself in that time frame, you go, okay, how do I make this better? And you start to adjust, which I think gets you back on track. Second one comes from the phrase hindsight's 2020. Sports, basketball specifically, has brought me a ton in my life. But what I've noticed is now I'm 31. I look back and go, man, I didn't realize how cool that moment was or how that impacted me. Who's somebody in your life that had a massive impact that you didn't necessarily realize in the moment?
Man, I haven't had a ton of like formal mentors, I would say. Uh-huh. But I will say, I won't say the name, but there was one individual in particular who, I grew up in a family that, you know, the what would get you a long way in life was just your work ethic, right? Working hard, being tough, no one's going to give you anything, and having this mindset. And so that's kind of the background in which I was raised on. But through that, there's a lot of tough love, right? So while as I'm going through college and kind of coming of age as a man, having this specific individual there to basically say, hey, it's okay, you're going to mess up a lot in life, but mm-hmm. I see something in you that's special. Mm-hmm. And I see that you're going to be able to do a lot of amazing things. And this is a time where I didn't necessarily see it in myself. So that was something that I had never really heard before coming from somebody, especially someone who didn't really know me particularly well. They just kind of seen how I went about my business and everything else, all my ideas and things like that that I had at a really young age and my ambition. But having somebody to basically just take the time and say, like, I see you and I see a lot of potential and you're going to do amazing things in your life. And especially, you know, the timing and everything was just so critical. And I think as coaches, like we're put in positions where we're able to impact so many people. I think that's why we're in this industry, not to be, you know, rich and make 8 figures, although that'd be amazing. And a lot of us aspire to have, you know, that freedom, but just taking a step back and saying, hey, wow, like we have an opportunity to impact. That's why we're doing what we're doing. So what can I do to just like give that confidence to, you know, each individual that I'm able to interact with so that they can maximize what they have? Because, you know, basketball, sports, life in general, like your mental health and how you perceive yourself is the single most important thing. If you have the confidence and you believe that you can achieve something and your mind really thinks that on a day-to-day basis, like you're going to manifest that. You know what I mean? And so I think that was probably like the single biggest moment for me.
I was just talking about a guy on that I grew up with. His name's Eric Fallingstead. He was 5 years older than me, and he was my dad's point guard. He's a senior when I was in seventh grade, and I would rebound mm-hmm. for him in the summer. And he was just wired differently. And I didn't really. He's kind of quiet. He's just like, hey, when we're on the floor, like you shut up and you go to work. And I would run around and rebound for him in the summer. And 2 weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, we're sitting in St. Louis watching my little sister play volleyball. I'm 31. I think he's like 36. And we're sitting in the hotel room. And I said, man, you know, like, I know that I'm wired different. And I stopped. And I thought about, okay, at what point did I really begin to be wired a little bit differently?
Right.
And I look back and I'm like, I remember going into my eighth grade year, I would rebound for Eric in the summer. And I realized that I looked up to him, but he was also mm-hmm. different. Whether he said it or not, it was almost like that pathway of him saying, it's okay for you to be different.
Right.
Like, absolutely. And I'm sitting here at 31 years old going, man, I was like 13. And right. And it was like, I just realized this now that he was kind of telling me it's okay.
Right. Absolutely. It's funny now, you know, as we're getting older, man, like just look at, there's so many moments like that. I kind of look back at like, when you're 13, when you're 10, when you're 8, and you know, when you're in your teens, just like so many little things like, okay, why am I like this? Like, how did I get here? And there's so many little things that are just like, there are so many warning signs that like kind of shape and mold you. As you're in it, you don't realize it, right? But as you kind of reflect, it's like, wow, like this is something that has been brewing over a lifetime. And just now it's just starting to kind of pour over, and people's, that's when you hear that term like, oh, they're overnight successful. Like, things don't happen overnight, man. It's something that there's a lot of factors on a day-to-day basis that, you know, that go into it. So yeah.
No, you're an overnight success. It just took you 15 years.
Exactly. Right.
And it goes back to it's like the biblical idea of planting the seed, right? Like you might plant the seed, and you might not get to harvest it, or you might, absolutely. You know, like somebody plants a seed in you when you're 13 that allows you at 35 to go start your second business that you're absolutely. Like, you know, I think that's crazy. From a social media standpoint, you know, I know that we connect with a lot of people there. Who's your favorite follow on social media? And I had a guy the other day say Rex Chapman. He was like, I like Rex just because he makes me feel good.
My favorite social, honestly, I don't consume a lot of stuff on social media, to be honest with you. I go to like SportsCenter to check in on on sports, but I'm gonna be honest, dude. I don't really consume a lot of content on social media. I obviously love your stuff and what you do. But yeah, I don't
this is
really
my podcast. You have to say that, Rock.
No, honestly, I think I look at people, I follow people in some different fields. I'm like, okay, this person's really talented at what they do. But yeah, for the most part, I don't really I'm not really consuming too much there. I try and connect more on the back end.
Joe Gill, the analytics guy, a couple weeks ago was like, man, there's so much information out there and so much stuff you can learn from. It's better than sending out all those like stupid memes from different pages. I said, Joe, I might send more stupid memes to my buddies than anybody else out there.
Right. Exactly.
So, well, since you're not a huge social media guy, let's talk. You said you check in on sports. You're a Minnesota sports fan. What's your Minnesota moment? And by Minnesota moment, which terrible Minnesota sports moment haunts you the most?
By far, not even close, 2009 playoffs when Favre was going against the Saints. The Vikings are going against the Saints. It's not even close. 98 was pretty devastating, too, when we played the Falcons.
Gary Anderson. That's what everybody says.
Oh, my gosh. I cried that game. I remember that like it was yesterday. And then basically to have a similar situation happen in 2009, that was just like – It made it really hard to get invested emotionally as a Vikings fan for me, because it's the letdown, man. So though it's like not even close.
Some of the moments that the Vikings moments are the best, and I say it. I feel like I say it every week on here because they're the best because Paul Allen on the radio like makes them the best. If you win. Paul Allen makes you want to like, my condo's on the fourth floor. I might dive out the window if Paul Allen screams it. But if they lose, he makes you want to sit on the couch and cry. And so I think that makes it definitely a little more dramatic. Last one, being a basketball guy yourself, having that background, who's the toughest player you've ever guarded in your life?
Nate Walters.
Yeah.
Playing around with that guy. Nate has a smooth game to him. He's fluid, but his change of direction. And as you know, he has the meanest double in and out move I probably have ever seen. And so we used to go at it a lot when we were training. And I'd be guarding him and just giving him some different looks and stuff. Like we go one-on-one, like all out. I'm sweating at least.
he's just chilling
and,
like all right.
And he's just like, man, like, you know, I played against a lot of, you know, college guys, stuff like that, but he's someone who's just like, he's incredible.
We joke that he's never missed a floater ever. Never missed a floater. And one of my favorite drills that I do with those guys is foam. You've seen me do it. Foam roller one-on-one.
Yep, so you put the foam roll up there.
I got the big foam roller and if they score, they get a bucket or they get a point. If I get a block or any type of contact, it's -1 and we'll play to like 3.
Right.
And those guys, I mean, it's timing. They ask to play it, but it's so like Anthony Tucker like blew by me last summer and was like, ooh, got him. And then I pinned that thing like 2 feet above the square and we're talking smack. But no, I think there's actually some clips on my website of one-on-one with Nate and I'm sitting, it's like, I can't time it. I'm literally, taco fall out there with the wingspan and I can't, I can't even, you can lock him up. I can't, even with a foam roller, but no, I do appreciate the stuff you put out online. I'm constantly learning, trying to help, you know, when people are asking, hey, what do I do about this? Again, because I'm not the guy giving athletic advice over here. But I do appreciate the content you put out and send that out. Before we close this thing down, can you let our listeners know where they can find you on social media and your website?
Yeah. The best place to connect with me. I'm an open book, man. I'm out here. I do what I do and I love what I do because I want to be blessing other people and just pour into their lives and, you know, help however way I can. So if any of you guys have questions, would love to connect. You can find me on Instagram at coach_rock. That's R-A-K, not rack, but rock. So yeah, find me on Instagram, coach_rock. Also, a good place you can check us out, my company, N1 Motion. We do athletic performance training with athletes of all levels. So if you're looking to connect or interested in our services, please contact us through there as well.
And that's N1 Motion, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, awesome. Thanks, Coach Rack. If I had a dollar for every time everyone's like, Coach Rack, and I'm like, okay, do I? Yeah, that's not his name. That's not. But my last name is OC, and I don't know if anyone's ever guessed that correctly. So I appreciate you coming on, and look forward to connecting with you soon.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Awesome. That was Coach Rock with N1 Motion. Again, I want to thank him for spending some time with me today. You know, we didn't get the opportunity to talk about it, but I'm sure he's incredibly excited to have Rachel Banham back in Minnesota with the Lynx. Rock has done a really nice job with her over the past few years. I believe she's been in Connecticut since she was drafted into the WNBA, but after playing at the University of Minnesota, it will be great to get another Minnesota legend back in town. Thanks for joining me today. We'll see you next week.